Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols. NBA champs Matt Barnes and Paul Pierce are going to be joining us in just a moment. We will also be joined by our draft guru, Mike Schmitz. He's going to tell us how his latest top five is shaping up. And there's this from last night. LeBron James given a flagrant one for this contact with Joel Embiid. Now, after the game, Embiid said LeBron should have been ejected. Is that BS or real talk? Our guys will weigh in on that. First, though, when you score 47 points in an NBA game, it is supposed to be a good night. But good nights have been hard to come by for Bradley Beal or the Wizards these days, and last night was no exception. Yes, Beal scored 47, including 6 three-pointers to go along with 6 assists and 4 steals. But the Pelicans' Zion Williamson and Brandon Ingram each dropped 32 themselves to hand the Wizards yet another loss. Washington now has the worst record in the NBA, and there are a lot of reasons for that. The franchise has been more wrecked by COVID issues than any other team. Starting center Thomas Bryant suffering a devastating season-ending torn ACL, and trading John Wall for Russell Westbrook has not, at least so far, paid off. But the bottom line result is that Beal, the NBA's leading scorer right now, keeps turning in spectacular performances, and the Wizards have not been able to turn that into any momentum. Here is what Beal has done in the team's last 6 games, and look at the win loss column next to each effort. Now you can zoom out to the past 2 years overall. Washington has lost all 10 of the last 10 games in which Beal has scored 40 or more. That's the worst such streak ever in the entire 75-year history of the NBA. So it's probably not a surprise that toward the end of last night's game, the cameras caught Beal looking pretty fed up. He would later say he was just upset about this particular loss. He added he wants to be more careful about his body language. But then his wife tweeted this, quote, sick of it, fueling speculation all over again that Beal might indeed be exasperated enough by the whole situation to ask for a trade. So what is Brad really thinking? Here was the man himself after the game.
You know, we have to be better defensively. You know, accepting those challenges, stop turning the ball over, getting our guys back healthy. So it's a lot. It's a lot for us to do in order for us to really turn this thing around. But, you know, our confidence is still high. Like you said, we can't have the mindset of being 3-11. So you know, come Friday, we got another tough one.
In a quick second, are you frustrated?
Is the sky blue? My man.
So Beal is frustrated, but as you can see there, still sounds pretty committed to trying to make this work. And I know our first guest today, Scott Brooks, just as frustrated by all those numbers I read off as Brad is, and also frustrated by the fact that forget any regular practices, Scott, you have barely been able to get your team in one place so far this season. So welcome in. We really appreciate you being with us today. And I just want to start there to give some perspective to why it has been so hard to win basketball games of late. You guys went through a stretch of 6 postponed games due to COVID. But even before or after that, you and I talked about a week ago, it's been hard to even know who's going to be on the roster day to day, right?
I agree with you, Rachel. Thanks for having me. Yeah, and the sky is blue. We're all frustrated. And I know Brad. Brad is a winning basketball player. He's been as competitive as any guy I've ever coached or even played with. And he's frustrated like we all are. And all family members are, all of our families, we're invested in this. And it's been tough. These are things that we cannot control. And it all started basically with that Miami game. That morning, Russell Westbrook was going to be out with a quad injury. Brad, they told me, Brad, about an hour before the game that he's going to be out because of contact tracing. And then a minute into that game, Thomas Bryant hurts his knee and he's out all year. And then after that, it seems like every other day we had a player in the protocol, health and protocol with the COVID. And it's like 7 players there. And we didn't practice for like 9 days. Didn't even see our guys. I only saw them occasionally in the parking lot when we were doing our test.
Oh, wow.
And then when we did practice for 3 days, we only had 8 guys. And then we start the trip on three games in 4 nights. Brad has been leading us. And unfortunately, a lot of the things that happen to us, we can't control. But we do have some, you know, there's some light at the end of the tunnel. We should have maybe 3 to 4, maybe even 5 guys back next game. So that's good to hear. It was, you know, we got into our trip last night, like 4 a.m., and I could not wait to get to the practice site. I get to see those 5 or 6 practice. So things are going to be looking up. But, yeah, frustration, everybody is. We all are.
Yeah, and look, I know you're as aware of the numbers as we are. I know you guys dive into those even more deeply. The effort that Brad is turning in, he's not just putting up these incredible performances. He's positive in plus minus, which is almost impossible given what else has been going on. I mean, it's crazy how efficient he has been, and yet it is not translating into winning. What conversations do you have with him along the way to keep him engaged in that situation?
I just keep telling him, keep leading us. It's hard to lead a team that's, you know, with all the things that has happened to us, but he has, and to his credit, he has led us. And he's, like I said, he's a winning basketball player. He impacts winning. We're not winning right now, and if we were, he would be in the MVP talk right now. But, you know, he's a guy that he believes in what we're doing, and we just have to keep chugging along. And I think our guys are understanding that. Like I said, we're going to have some guys coming back. Things are going to be starting to look up for us, but Brad is a big part of what we do, and I couldn't ask for a better guy to coach.
Yeah, I mean, he is the NBA's leading scorer right now, and as you note, he is so team-oriented, he is loyal, he doesn't pop off and cause a lot of problems for you that as a coach you have to come back and try to fix, and that's the kind of guy that, frankly, a lot of teams want. The NBA is a competitive business. You know other teams are not just sitting there feeling bad for you guys, what you've been through the last couple weeks. What is it like to coach in an environment where you know there are probably 25 other organizations out there that would love to have Bradley Beal on their team and are frankly hoping things in D.C. blow up to the point he requests a trade?
Well, I tell the guys all the time, nobody feels sorry for us, nobody. The only guys in our locker room that cares are the guys in the locker room and our families. And, you know, Brad, like I said, Brad is a winning basketball player. I love coaching him. He's one of the best guys to be a franchise player on the court and off the court. The guy does amazing things in the community. But like I said, he would be an MVP talk if we can get some wins. And we will. We got our guys coming back. But he's done a great job of leading us during these difficult times. And like I said, nobody's ever done this before. I mean, nobody, you can't prepare for this. COVID is real. It's not a hoax, and it's real. I'm just glad all of our guys are coming back healthy. And then we're ready. You know, the next couple of games, I think we should have a nice little rhythm. We're going to have 15 games in February to make up some of these games that we've missed. But Brad is a winner, and I can never say that enough. But I enjoy coaching him. He's like the perfect guy for a franchise to lead a franchise.
Absolutely. Well, as you say, no one's ever been through this kind of situation before. Who knew, Scott, that you get to a hotel at 4 a.m. and all you would want to do was just go to a practice court? But that is the situation we have found ourselves in. Thank you so much for stopping by today. We really appreciate it, and best of luck in this next stretch.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. All right, guys, so that is really the Washington perspective on things, but I do want to get to the larger league perspective and also what's going on going forward with Bradley Beal. How long can this situation hold? So we're going to bring in now our senior NBA insider. We're fortunate to have Adrian Wojnarowski with us today, too. So, Woj, what can you tell us from the Bradley Beal side of things?
Well, Rach, I talked to Mark Bartlestein of Priority Sports. He's Bradley Beal's agent yesterday evening, and he told me that, you know, right now Bradley's focus and his focus with the Wizards is just on trying to get this season turned around and trying to get this team on track. And I think Beal, when he signed that extension, adding on a couple years onto his deal, remember, he's under contract next season, 21-22, has a player option for 22-23. You know, he knew that there was going to be a period here that they needed to see growth, and that he wanted to see, I think, where the Wizards could go as an organization. John Wall was coming back. You know, obviously they brought in Rui Hachimura. You know, Thomas Bryant, that was a significant injury, losing him for the season. This isn't the team they imagined going into this year. But the one thing about Beal and I think the relationship he's had with that organization is he's not impetuous typically with what's going on. And he has been extremely loyal there. I think people were surprised when he decided to do that extension, given where the team was. Now, the trade deadline is March 25th, and so that's less than 2 months away right now. And there's been no indication, and you talk to other teams who are all over the league monitoring the Beal situation closely and looking for any inkling to think that he might be coming available. And teams typically will know before anybody else does. Before we even report it, they will know that there's an opening there, and none of them sense that now. And so I think for Beal, listen, things change, you know, but right now, trying to get this team back on track. But there's no question, I think his future, certainly his long-term future, Rach, is very uncertain there. And I think even once we get to the trade deadline, if he starts to think about what is my future here, is that something you want to address at the trade deadline in the middle of a pandemic? Or do you want to address it perhaps in the offseason when you can see a broader landscape of what the league looks like, what the future of the Wizards look like? And I think those are all things that Beal and Mark Bartlestein are going to have to weigh together.
I love that behind-the-scenes insight, because I think fans sometimes think, oh, we're stirring stuff up or asking these questions. We start talking about stuff after the teams start talking about stuff. And it is one of the number one topics of conversation, right, among other front offices, is what is going to happen with Bradley Beal, because he could be such a game changer to the balance of the league. That's how big a deal this is as a part on a team that already thinks it might be headed for championship contention. Woj, what are the teams that are having those discussions most intensely and just waiting for something to change in the Beal Wizards dynamic?
Well, there's not a team in the league who wouldn't love to find a way to add Bradley Beal. And even look back to the James Harden talks. I'm not sure every organization felt they were equipped, they were a fit for James Harden. No one denied his talent. But would James Harden want to stay here? Would he fit in with the guys we have? Are there the relationships there that would might be needed going in to make it work? Do we want to give up all these assets for a player who could walk on us? All those questions. I think with Beal, I think there are a lot more teams who know, who believe that you could just fit him in with other great players, and he'd find a way. He'd add to your culture. He'd add into your environment, and certainly on the court, a player at 27 years old who still has who's very much in his prime.
Yeah.
I think for teams like Golden State or the Denvers, teams who have assets, who are contenders, but also when they're healthy, but also have let's say if you're Golden State, you've got that Minnesota draft pick. If you're Denver, you've got a great young player in Michael Porter Jr. You got an all-star in Jamal Murray in the backcourt. Now, I'm not saying they would do it, but you look at those teams and say they'd have enough to get in the conversation, and that's going to be the decision for teams all over the league. Of course, the Lakers and Clippers would love to be able to get involved in that, but do they have the draft picks? Do they have the young players it would take? That would top a package from some other teams, maybe not. And so, but you're going to see it will be a frenzy if and when, Bradley Beal gets on the market, and he will have a say in where he goes because of his contract situation. Unless a team is just willing to do a trade, hope to convince him to stay long term, they would have him under contract next season. But that's pretty risky for somebody who might be having to give up multiple. You will be giving up multiple first-round picks, probably your best young player. So I think those are all considerations for teams. But boy, I don't think there will be many who aren't going to make a call and sit and brainstorm and try to figure out, could we get Bradley Beal if he becomes available?
So fascinating. The entire league watching Washington, D.C. right now. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We will see you back here soon
enough. Thanks, Rach.
Thanks so much to Woj. And up next, Matt Barnes and Paul Pierce join me to discuss what the Wizards can do, to make Brad Beal not look like this anymore. I think just getting players back on the court will certainly help. Welcome back to The Jump. We just heard from Wizards coach Scott Brooks. We heard from Woj in our last segment. But now I want to bring in Matt Barnes and Paul Pierce, former Wizard Paul Pierce, I should point out, to get the players' perspective on all this. Paul, what can the Wizards do to make Beal happy at this point? Because he appears to still be interested. He got up there again last night and said, I want to set things right and stay with this team and be with this team in this way.
Let me tell you something, Rach. I was in the same circumstance in my ninth year, and Beal, I believe, is in his ninth year. He wants to be recognized as one of the game's best players, and you don't get that same recognition when you're on a losing team. And so I really clearly understand this frustration, but I think they have to play out the year, you know, and then after the year, reevaluate things, because that's the same thing that happened to me. I was at the boiling point where I was ready to get traded. If we didn't do anything, then Allah, here comes Kevin and Ray in my next year. So I'm not sure if they're capable of doing that, you know, bringing in those type of players the following year. But I truly understand his frustrations. And if they can't do anything by the summer, I would really suggest trying to trade them and get younger assets and give Bill at least opportunity to be recognized as one of the game's best players on a contender.
I love Scott Brooks. I almost kind of felt bad when he was telling his stories, but similar teams have gone through similar issues. Bradley Beal's a consummate pro on and off the court. But in my eyes, anything short of getting KG and Ray, which that ain't happening at the end of this year, the only thing to make Brad happy is gonna you gotta trade him. You know, I feel like I've been saying this for the last 2 years, you know, tremendous talent. The thing about Brad is he's going to continue to work hard and continue to say the right thing. He's not going to sit out. He's not going to disappear. He's not going to cause a distraction. He's going to continue to say the right thing. But to me, in my opinion, the only thing that's going to make him happy, honestly, is to be able to trade him and let him, you know, enjoy his prime on a team that has a chance to win a championship. Because this team, even healthy, even with guys coming back, they're still not a very good team.
And it will be interesting to see what they can do when guys come back. I will say the litany of what this team has been through in the past couple weeks, it is insanity. You look at their off and on list, who's out one day, who's not out one day, injuries coming in, Russell Westbrook's in, then Russell Westbrook's out for a week. They pulled Bradley Beal just in case Jason Tatum made him sick when Jason Tatum had a COVID positive test. Then Brad comes back in the lineup. Then more guys go out. Then they start canceling and postponing more games. It has been a mess. They have not even seen each other. You heard Scott say they're only meeting basically in the parking lot to come back and forth from testing. So I think it's fair to give them a little more run here. As he said, they're playing 15 games in February to try to make up for some of these postponements. And we'll see what happens going into that March trade deadline. So it's an interesting situation.
First of all, that, I mean, you look at it, that's a very dangerous play. And I guarantee you that if it was me, I would have probably been ejected from the game, which, you know, has happened in the past with me getting flagrant fouls really for nothing. When you compare that to the one that I got, which I thought I didn't hit him. I didn't elbow him. I might have touched him, but I don't think he deserved the flagrant. I mean, if you're going to compare those two, those are tough plays, and I just thought, you know, should have been a flagrant too.
So welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, still joined by Matt Barnes, Paul Pierce. And guys, that was Joel Embiid talking about LeBron's hard foul on him last night in comparison to his foul on Anthony Davis. Paul, do you think Joel has a point?
You know what, Rach? I come from a different era. To me, that wasn't even that flagrant. I mean, I thought LeBron really put his arms out to prevent him from getting dunked on. It wasn't like, I thought Joel just kind of fell bad. And since he fell right on his back, it made it look worse than it really was. So in my eyes, in my era, that's not even a flagrant. And so I don't know, but it's a different league today. And, you know, if you fall hard or you yell or you put your hand over your eye, it's a flagrant these days.
No, I completely agree. And I've had my fair share of flagrants and flagrant twos. And to me, when you guys said hard foul, I didn't even think it was a hard foul. I think the situation was that Embiid was just off balance. And like I said, LeBron didn't do a full push motion. He just put his hands out to kind of embrace himself because he knew he was about to get dunked on, but Embiid was off balance. So, you know, a flagrant foul in today's game, I understand, but definitely not a flagrant two by any means.
Yeah, it's interesting. Doc Rivers, absolutely. Your old coach, Paul, agreed with you. He said, first of all, LeBron is not a dirty player, according to Doc. And he also said it was just a physical play. Doc said they had to call it a flagrant. But he said all the flagrants tonight, and that includes Embiid's, by the way. Doc said, you get a flagrant for anything these days, basically. It was just, you know, to his point, it was sort of the same thing as yours, saying, hey, back in the day, we just called those hard fouls. I think one of the things that frustrated Joel fouls. was the sort of discrepancy, right? So he gets called for that call on AD, and he sort of feels like, well, okay, what happened here was worse or just as bad or anything like that. But it is true. It's a different game, gentlemen, than when you guys were in your prime. I'm just saying that. I want to stick with this game, though, and focus on the Sixers. Paul, what did you learn about Philadelphia after that win over the Lakers?
You know what, Rachel, truthfully, I haven't learned much, and this is why. Because, yes, they've gotten better because I think they've gotten better coaching. And I think Embiid came back a better player. But in order for this team to take the next step, and I mean serious contention, I believe that Ben Simmons, he has to get better. He has to be a better player for them. Since his rookie year, I don't think he's elevated his game to superstar status, because you remember we said this guy could be the next LeBron. We looked at his build, his athletic ability, the way he passed the ball, but he just never took his game to that next level since rookie year. Yeah, they'll be better because they have better coaching, better discipline, but I didn't learn much. You learn more about teams once they get in the playoffs, because right now I think the Celtics don't sweep them. The Sixers win maybe two games. That's probably what I learned.
Still early in the season, so it's hard to really tell, what a team is about. What I do love is I feel like Doc has empowered these guys and have them believing in themselves. And I agree with Paul to an extent. I think, we haven't seen the jump from Ben that we thought we were going to see after his, first couple great seasons. But we see Embiid playing at an all-star level. Ben Simmons is right around that triple-double. But to me, if Tobias Harris can be this consistent guy that he's been of late, he had a great season with Doc in L.A., and now he's out there playing very confident, and they always needed someone to fill that Jimmy Butler role. Although Jimmy wasn't there long, he was the guy down the stretch that made plays for everyone else and hit big shots. And Tobias is that talented, and he's the highest paid player on that team. So Tobias has had a great season. I think Doc has empowered him, and if he could be their go-to guy at the end to be able to hit big shots, I think Philly's going to be all right.
Yeah, I mean, that is a huge difference for them. And what Doc has done is kind of doubled down on what he thinks his guys are good at. So he has definitely told Joel, we're giving you the keys. You are going to be the main guy our franchise is built around. But he has also said to Ben, I'm not going to try to turn you into something you're not. He's really emphasized what Ben's strengths are. Ben is great around the basket. And defensively, man, if you took him off this team, they would be an entire different defensive presence. So what Doc is trying to do is say, hey, do what you're good at. Do that to the best of your ability. We won't try to ask you to do too many other things. And Tobias's game picking back up obviously helps him with that. I'm interested in this Philly team, but the East, man, the East is hopping. The Nets going on. The Bucks still East presence, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, Celtics want to make a statement. Philadelphia, and then you've got the defending Eastern Conference champions, the Miami Heat, which we will get to later in the show. But right first, I want to check out Utah because, boy, they are the NBA's hottest team, people. Last night, the Jazz beat the Mavericks 116-104 without the services of Donovan Mitchell, who was in the concussion protocol. Rudy Gobert scored 29, grabbed 20 rebounds. Jordan Clarkson came off the bench to drop 31. Paul, what does this win without Donovan Mitchell tell you about how good the Jazz can be?
Well, this tells me that they're a very well-coached and disciplined team. You know, they can play with or without their star. Utah, what more can you say about them? They're going to be in the mix every year, but there's just something they're missing. You know, when I want to put them up there in the ranks of playing the Los Angeles Lakers possibly to a 7-game or even, pushing the Denver Nuggets again this year. It's just something I feel like they're missing, but they're having a great year. Maybe they learned from the series last year and they're building on that. But this tells me they're well coached, man. And I love Snyder over there. He's doing an excellent job, through all the protocols, through all missing their stars. Yep. Rudy Gobert, it seems like he's motivated after Shaq called him out. And so I really like this team moving forward.
I agree with Paul. I think they're a great coach team. They remind me of, an up-and-coming San Antonio team, although they don't have the star assets. But like I said, well-coached, good organization, and it's a system where you can plug players in and out. Obviously, I don't think they can consistently win without their best player, but they do have some talent out there, and I agree with Paul. I really feel like they're that one piece away. And I think, Rachel, we talked earlier in the week about this. If they stay on this pace with two or three, at the trade deadline, do they try to go after someone like a Zach LaVine or possibly a Bradley Beal. And I feel like either one of those players would definitely put them over the hump, because I really feel like they need that one more consistent score that's going to be in that 20 to 25 point a game range for them to make real noise in the Western Conference.
And Matt, I know that there's been some pushback from Jazz fans going, well, what about Jordan Clarkson, man? And he is certainly, I think, the leading candidate right
great
now six for
man.
Sixth Man of the Year. But that's different from what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, great six man. You know, you need a starter that's going to fill that role. Jordan Clarkson's been playing his heart out this season. It looked like he really found a home. They rewarded him for his play, so I'm really happy with him. So you want Jordan Clarkson and Mike Conley to be those third and fourth options, but you need that consistent second option, because I don't see you getting 29 and 20 every night from big fella.
Well, of course, getting Donovan Mitchell back will help with all of that for sure. All right, guys, here's what The Jump recommends for today. Our draft analyst, Mike Schmitz, breaking down the G League's plans to develop top prospects. He's going to join us in our next segment to elaborate on that. Check it out during the break on ESPN+. We'll be back. All right, I now want to welcome in our NBA draft guru, Mike Schmitz. I assume that's what it says on your business cards. Thanks for joining us today. You recently spent some time up in Walnut Creek, California, where the G League Ignite team was practicing. They're composed of NBA draft prospects who, I don't want to say skip school, they opted not to go to college. Instead, they're holding training camp in a bubble there, preparing for the G League season. What's your biggest takeaway being with these guys?
My biggest takeaway was that they have two potential top five picks who have been developing kind of off the radar, you know, 30 minutes away from San Francisco in Jalen Green and Jonathan Kuminga. And they have four potential draft picks in total when you talk about Isaiah Todd and Dacian Nix. And they've really been impacted by this pandemic more than anybody, because the G League season obviously put on pause, and they've been developing out there since late August. So we're talking about 5 months for these guys. And early on, it was just kind of one-on-one workouts. There wasn't that much that they could do. But over these past few months, they've really been building toward this G League bubble. They've added veterans. When you talk about Jarrett Jack, 37-year-old veteran who's played so many big NBA games, Amir Johnson. They've added a ton of guys. Bobby Brown, who's played all over the world. So I was able to see kind of their daily routine and what that's like. And it's 8 a.m. COVID testing every single day. And then it's really an NBA environment. From there, you're talking about individual skill workout, you're getting your lift in, and then you have your team practice going through concepts offensively, defensively, how are we guarding pick and roll, learning NBA actions. So they're really gearing up for this bubble, and it's not going to be easy for them. They're going to play 15 to 20 games out in Orlando. They're leaving on Sunday, and this is a great chance for NBA scouts, executives to really get their first look at them. But they're going to be playing against guys who have played the NBA, who are hungry, who want to prove that the G League is not high school basketball, and it's not about just coming in with your five-star ranking. So we're going to learn a lot more about these prospects in the next few weeks here, but I was impressed with what they've been doing down in Walnut Creek.
Hey, Mike, how you doing? Paul Pierce here. I had an opportunity to be around Jalen Green when he was a high school player. He played on my AAU team for a couple tournaments. I wanted to just get an update on how's he doing. And also, how does this, you know, change the landscape from, you know, top high school prospects, you know, for going college and going to the G, straight to the G League?
Yeah, Jalen looked really good. You know, I've called him the most exciting prospect in this draft. We still have him at number three. I'm not sure he's the top prospect in this draft, but just from a level of athleticism that no one else has, he's kind of an entertainer on the floor. He loves the bright lights. And I think of Zach LaVine when I look at him athletically, a guy who just has absolute springs. You know, one NBA scout described him as having million-dollar legs with just that type of athleticism. He shoots it easy. He can score it from all three levels. So for him, it's about improving defensively. I think he really wants to show that he can be a two-way player. And the vets actually had a play they would call called Baby. And they would basically just put him in the mid post and attack him. And he held his own. And he's going to be a guy who's going to be tested in the bubble as well. But, you know, in terms of the landscape of college basketball, I mean, this is a different venture. You know, you're still going to have your guys like Steph Curry, Paul George, Kawhi. Kawhi, CJ McCollum, Damian Lillard, who kind of need that timeline to go do it at the collegiate level. But when you're talking about your top guys like a Jalen Green, like a Jonathan Kuminga, who's really impressive in his own right, kind of like a Jaylen Brown type of prospect, you know, this is intriguing for them just because they're able to be coached by Brian Shaw, who has so much experience. They're around those vets that we talked about. They're shooting with an NBA ball from the NBA three-point line. They're learning how to ice ball screens in the sideline, and like they're really learning how to play NBA basketball. Now, unfortunately for them, they haven't had the opportunity to play a game yet, and you guys know you learn so much from those battles, whether it's at Kansas or UCLA, having to take no possessions off and play against your peers. So I'm really curious to see how this is all going to come together. But like I said, we're going to learn a lot more about these prospects once we see them in the bubble.
Well, you said Zach LaVine. When I first saw Jalen Green, but when I first saw Jalen Green, my first thought was Tracy McGrady.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's still developing kind of those point guard skills, right? And but I told him, I think he has a chance to be a guy who can play on the ball in the future, you know, like we've seen from Zach, who's developed as a playmaker, even like a Bradley Beal type, you know, a guy who can score it at all three levels and has improved as a facilitator as well. So, yeah, I mean, he's a big-time talent, and I think people are going to be really impressed just with how effortlessly he scores the ball.
It's good to hear.
Mike, how you doing? How you doing, Matt Barnes? So who are your top five right now, although early, heading into this draft?
Yeah, so number one is Cade Cunningham. He's been the number one prospect for us all year. 6'8", 7'2" wingspan, 220 pounds. Really exactly what every team is looking for in today's NBA. You look at all these 6'8" wings who can create offense from all over the floor, and he really has that. You know, he makes everyone around him better. But this is an incredibly strong top five, okay? So all these guys could potentially contend for number one. You have Cade at Oklahoma State, and then you have Evan Mobley, who shows you a little bit of glimpses of a young Anthony Davis, just with his defense, his versatility, his skill level offensively. Jalen Green, like I talked about, Jalen Suggs, who's a tough-minded guard. He's
like
the best
Suggs.
Player on the best team in America at Gonzaga. Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of like a Jrue Holiday type, just with his toughness and how he impacts winning. And then Jonathan Kuminga, like I said, 6'8", long arms, defends multiple positions, can make an open shot. You know, he's been neck and neck with Jalen out there on a day-to-day basis in scrimmages, in practice settings. So I think he's going to open some eyes as well out in Orlando.
Well, thank you so much.
All
really
right,
appreciate it, Mike. I know that Paul Pierce is going to keep an eye on his former protege there. So we'll be checking in with you as we go here toward the draft. We really appreciate your time. Now, guys, stick with us because All-Star voting begins today. What player do you most want to see named to his first All-Star game? I can't wait to hear what Matt and Paul have to say on this one. Stick with us. You're watching The Jump. Welcome back. I'm Rachel Nichols here with Paul Pierce and Matt Barnes. Our show winding down. So you know what that means, guys. It's crunch time here on The Jump. Sources telling our Ramona Shelburne that two-time WNBA MVP Candace Parker has committed to play for her hometown Chicago Sky after 13 seasons with the Los Angeles Sparks. Paul, did you expect to see Parker retire with the Sparks? She's making a move here.
Well, she's going home, and unlike myself, when I came home, she has a lot more in the tank. So she actually gets to give her home fans, you know, something to cheer about.
Yeah, you know, obviously you thought she would retire Spark. You know, there was some button heads with the head coach and some management, and unfortunately this is the business. So, you know, it's interesting to see who she's going to end up retiring with. Does she sign a one-year or one-day situation to retire with the Sparks, or is she just finish in her hometown?
Yeah, well, no, she's, according to Ramona, not going to be playing with them this season. Chelsea Gray, as we just heard, also moving on. It'll be very interesting here in Los Angeles. All right, All-Star voting in the NBA opens today. Matt, who is the first-time All-Star you most want to see get named to the team? A guy who hasn't made it before.
I wanted to see CJ McCollum, but he's hurt, so I'm going to go with my Bruin brother, Zach LaVine.
Well, you know what? I try not to be biased in all these things, but how can I not be? Jaylen Brown for the Celtics. He's been magnificent on both ends of the court. Without Jason Tatum, he's having an all-star year. He needs to be in there. You fans, if you're watching, vote him in. If not, coaches, you better know what you're doing. Jaylen Brown should be an all-star.
Agreed.
Lots of interesting choices this year, and they are talking about maybe staging an all-star game in Atlanta, but either way, they are going to have teams of all-stars, so voting is open up today. All the fans can go in there and start casting their ballots. All right, guys, it's time for our League Pass game of the night. Only four games on the night. Not too much to choose from, because remember, our producers can't pick any national games. So they went with Clippers Heat at 8 Eastern. Kawhi Leonard and Paul George still out due to COVID protocols. Jimmy Butler out for weeks due to the same reason. The good news is the Heat are listing Butler, Goran Dragic, and Tyler Hero all as questionable tonight. The bad news is the Heat are 6-11 on the year. Paul, they are another team like the Wizards who has been really hit by COVID-related absences. Do you think that they have dug too deep a hole for themselves?
As great as the Miami Heat were in the playoffs last year, they will not make the playoffs this year, Rach.
Whoa.
And we saw a play earlier in the show where Jokic got the ball through a full court. That's not the Miami Heat team we saw last year. You know, full of grit, you know, full of grind, like the Memphis Grizzlies. You know, that team was built on hard work and toughness, and I have not seen that this year. And that's why I don't think they'll make the playoffs.
Mm.
That's a tough call. I mean, this team goes as Jimmy Butler goes, so I don't think it's too late to get going, but it's just depending on Jimmy's health. And then when he's out there, he's performed. He's underperformed this year for a variety of reasons, but this team is only as good as Jimmy Butler. And right now, it's been a little rocky with him being in and out.
Yeah, I'm interested to see if they do anything before the trade deadline. Obviously, they have great young talent. And I kind of expected them at the start of the season not to make a huge push, just the exhaustion that I think that whole team had. I mean, they had a different run-up to the finals than the Lakers did. The Heat really had to physically battle every step of the way to get to those NBA finals. And then because of the injuries they had in the finals, the guys who did play had to physically give so much of themselves. And then these COVID-related absences. Remember, guys, there is a play-in tournament this year. Last year, it's not like the Heat were a super high seed. They knocked off the Milwaukee Bucks, who were above them in the bracket. Do you think, Matt, that if they do get in, they can knock off a team above them if they get hot toward the end?
I mean, Paul will tell you, the playoffs are just about getting hot at the right time, and that's what Miami did. And I think with all due respect, they overachieved last year. You know, no one really saw them coming out of the East, but the way they played, their style, their grit and grind, and the way Jimmy was playing, had these guys playing above themselves. But, you know, anything is possible, but it's looking ugly right now.
Paul, if they do get in, can you see them making some noise, taking down a higher seed?
Of course. I mean, that's all on Jimmy Butler. I mean, he's played spectacular last year. If he can get back to that level, because when he's played this year, he hasn't been that guy. But if he can get back to that level, of course they can.
We'll see. Well, he's questionable for tonight. He is the key, as you say, Matt, for that team. We'll have to see who they put on the floor. Thanks to Matt and Paul for joining me. Coach Pat Brooks as well. See you tomorrow.